you worked in the Scotch, was it Scotch
Mills? Scotch Woolen Mills, yeah.
Scotch Woolen Mills for about a year?
About a year, uh-huh. Yeah. Now, that was my first shop that I worked in Chicago. Uh-huh. Yeah.
What were the circumstances of you leaving? Why did you leave?
Well, I told you last time. He was fresh to me. Didn't you record it last
right.
time?
Was that in? Was that particular instance the one that made you decide to leave the shop?
Yeah, I ran out and I was crying. Yeah, shall I repeat this again? They taught me what to do, different kind of work.
Yeah.
First I was doing sleeve basting, and then it took me for armhole basting, shoulder basting, and I was making more money. And more money. It wasn't much, but at that time it was a lot of money. Made $3, $4, $5 a week, but it was a lot of money at that time. And the boss, the foreman, rather, came up to me in the back, and he took me around, took his hands around, and like this year, I turned around. I didn't know who it was. I turned around. I saw him. He was a redhead, a short fellow. And I slapped him in the face, and the girl started yelling, "Oh, Lottie, what did you do?" And I ran out crying. And he evidently wanted to protect himself for his wife. His wife was a friend of my aunt's. In fact, his wife was a maid for my grandfather, and that's how my aunt knew them. They were two sisters. One of the sisters worked with me by one table. And so and when my aunt came to Chicago, she was married already to this man, and they became friends. So so he was afraid that I'll come home and tell my aunt, and my aunt will tell his wife and make a whole rumpus. So he called up his wife, and he said, "Lottie slapped me." And he said to her. So she called up my aunt, and she told my aunt, "You see, you take in somebody, do a favor, and somebody does you harm yet." So my aunt was always, she always smiled. Whether it was something to smile, she smiled all the time. So she was standing outside. She said, "Where is Lottie?" And she said, "Lottie ran away." So she was, she understood that I was coming home. So she was standing outside on the steps and waiting for me. When I came in crying, my face was dirty. I was that time 14 years old. And my aunt greeted me. She said, "Don't cry, don't cry. Let him go to hell. Don't worry about it." So I understood that she knew everything already. So I went in the bedroom, and I closed the door, and I lay down on the bed, and I cried some more. And she came in, and she said, "Don't worry, don't worry. You'll get a job. Don't worry, you'll get a job." So, and I was a very shy girl at that time. And I stayed home a couple of days. I couldn't make up my mind to go for a job, looking for a job. And
did you know where to go?
I was told to go. No, I was told that the whole industry is on Market Street. On Market Street. The whole industry is on Market Street. So after a couple of days, I thought to myself, what am I going to lay home? I need money, I need clothes, and my aunt can't give it to me, all that. I'll go out and look for a job.
Did anybody ever say anything to you, or did you just think about it and decide on your own?
No, I decided myself. I was, for my age, yeah, I had sense enough, because I wanted to educate myself, I wanted to go to school, I wanted to do things, I wanted to be independent. I had sense enough for myself. I was a big girl at that time. I showed you the picture, but with being big, I think I overgrew the little girls in my age. I knew how to handle myself, because I had several occasion that the boys were tough to me, and I ignored them or ran away from them and so on.
So do you...
This is an upbringing my mother told me, to keep away from boys when they are fresh and so on, and I obeyed my mother's orders. What do you want to ask?
I was just, you were commenting about how you feel you were a little more independent, and...
I wanted to work. I wanted to make, as long as I was away from home, I had to do my own worry about making a living, about making a living.
Do you think that there were a lot of other women in Chicago in the clothing industry that at time in that same type of situation?
Yes, because the parents were poor. Take this year Irene. She struggled an awful lot because her parents were poor, her father was a presser, and her sisters, one of them worked in the tailor shop, and she worked in the tailor shop, and they had a hard time to meet. They had a couple of children, and they had a hard time to meet. So I dressed myself one morning, and I went downtown to look for a job. I saw a lot of signs. They had wooden paper signs. Cardboard signs on the doors. One that a stitching girl, one that an armhole girl, one that a basting girl, one that a finishing girl. That's the way you sign.
Did you read the signs?
Yeah. I read signs when I got up to the boat when I was 12 years old. I read the signs when I was 12 years old. I was coming down from the boat in Fall River. And my uncle, I told you, our uncle brought me. And when I walked, it was a walking distance from the boat to his home. And he carried I had a basket at that time. And he carried my basket and I carried something. And I read the signs. And there was a little girl they had. She was 6 years old, Sarah. And I read the signs from the stores. And that little girl said, "Oh, Daddy, she could read. She could read." She was so surprised because they told her, they kept on saying, "A greenhorn is coming, a greenhorn is coming." And here I was a greenhorn, I was reading the signs. See, I had Polish and I had Russian and I had German at home. Mm-hmm. You know, as much as a girl of 12 years old, I told you I didn't want to go to school because I was a big girl and I had private tutors I had. So I had more education than the kids in the school. So I used to read
you were able to read.
I was able to read, yeah. So so I read the signs and when I came to Chicago, I went to evening school, to Lawson Evening School. It was a school a block away from my end. I went to evening school. And I got in there, to sixth grade I got in there right away. So I wasn't a greenhorn. Mm-hmm. So, because in Fall River, I had two cousins, medical students, and they taught me English. So when I came here already, I was ready to go in sixth grade. So I read the signs, and stitching I couldn't do it, finishing I couldn't do it, and I was looking for an armhole baster. Finally, I found an armhole baster in C.B. Shane Company. And that was a nice shop, C.B. Shane. There I made $5 a week over there.
Okay, you walked into the factory that day. Were there a lot of people applying for that job? Or?
Well, when I came there, they needed the... I was the only one, maybe before there were people, I don't know. And they took me right away for an arm over. The foreman. Told me to make out application, and I made out application, and they took me in, and I sat down there, and I met their nice girls working. I met their Italian girls that I was friends with her for a long, long time. I met their Jewish girl that I moved to her later, and I lived there with her till I got married. A couple of years I lived with her over there. She lived with a mother-in-law, and there were three sons. So all the three sons and the daughter-in-law lived together, and I lived there too with them.
Lottie, I remember you saying about the first shop that you were always really, really busy, and there really wasn't the time to talk to the other other women in the shop. Now, was it, that the same issue at C.B. Shane? Or
no, that was in the Scotch Woolen Mills.
Right, right.
Yeah, you couldn't talk to each other. The foreman came over and said, shut up, shut up. You couldn't open your mouth. So the only time when you said a word was in the toilet room. And then you couldn't go to the toilet. They wouldn't let you go, although you were piecework.
Yeah, they had permission.
You couldn't run to the toilet. You couldn't run to the toilet all the time. But I managed. In the other shop, was nicer to work in the other shop.
How was it nicer?
Well, you could talk to people. There were Italian people. There were a Polish woman that I worked with her. And she had her family in Warsaw. And she couldn't read and write. And I used to write her letters to her husband and to the children. Polish. I used to write her letters for her. And I made friends with a girl, with an Italian girl, that they used to live in Austin. And she made me, and she used to come home and tell her mother all the time about me. And she liked me very much, and I liked her. So her mother used to invite me for dinner. And her mother, they had a home of their own. She had a sister, a school teacher, and another sister worked in the office. And her father was a street cleaner. Years ago, we had street cleaners. But they were very fine people, very. They had their own house. And the mother was very kind to me. They had a garden. She used to, before I went home, she used to give me tomatoes. She used to give me a little jar of jelly to take home. And I was very good friends with that, Mildred was her name, the girl. And until we went out on strike. And I was the one to pull the people down on strike. The man used to make $15, $20. I used to make $5, $4, $6. But we were satisfied. But we wanted a union shop. In 1915, when everybody went out on strike, they went out to make more money. So I thought, well, if it's a union, it's good for people to make more money. We could get more money too. So
how did you hear about the walkout?
I used to go out for lunch. And across the street was Harry Chetness from us. That was on. And Franklin, no, I don't think that Franklin's over there. Franklin is the Walker Drive or Walker, whatever it is, a boulevard now. Our factory was across the street of them, and that was cutters and I think the lining makers or trimmers were there. And during the lunch hour, they would all stay outside. And I would go walk up to the corner and cross the street, and I used to read the paper. I knew that it was a strike going on. I used to read the paper. I used to read the Examiner. We had an English paper, the Examiner, that time go out. And I used to buy a paper every morning, and I used to read it. I was very much interested. And I used to walk on the other side, and I would hear from the boys. Only boys, only men were out at that time, standing on the corner. And I would hear from them talk, and I would stay and listen to them. They would ignore me. I was a young kid. They would ignore me. But I used to ask them questions. And they asked me from where I was, and I told them I was from a shop. I was from across the street. And they should help us to unionize the shop. And they helped me to unionize the shop.
What was their initial reaction to you the first time that you said that you were interested in bringing the union in?
Well, at that time, they were organizing a lot of shops. Although this shop, nobody asked for this shop. And I was the only one that asked for this shop to organize it. So, and I didn't know anything about the union at that time. I didn't know anything about a union at that time. Nothing. But
Why did you ask then? Why did you want to bring the union in?
I had a background from my father. I had a little background from my father. My father used to help a lot of poor people at home. He used to give away his shirt for poor people. He was a jeweler. But he did a lot of work for nothing for people. And the money he gave away and everything. And people used to eat by us day and night. He used to bring home from the synagogue people that had no place to go. We had a lot of beggars going around by us in our city. And people used to take home for Saturday and for Friday beggars to eat. They had no place to eat. They used to walk miles and miles from one town to the other, from one town to the other. And we had all the time a couple of beggars in our house. So I was injected of it to help poor people all the time. So when I used to read in the paper about the union helps people, and the people are out of work, and they picketing the shops in order to unionize the shops and to make more money. And so on, and a lot of people have big families and so on. There were some people that really were involved that they didn't have any money, and they were on welfare used to help them. Jewish charities used to help the Jewish people, and churches used to help other people. The whole house used to help poor people there. And I was one of them in the whole house to come in later. Later I learned about the whole house. Oh, about the whole house I knew before when I worked in Skatchewilmans. I used to pass, walk to Roosevelt Road, and I used to notice the whole house. I used to go in there in the whole house. I was told I could get a cup of coffee there. So I used to go in the whole house to get a cup of coffee. So sometimes I used to get a sandwich too. I used to get there. So I knew about the whole house. So when I was talking to the boys to unionize, so I wanted to unionize. The poor people should have more because they were workers, and a lot of people were out of work.
Did you have any doubts about that? I mean, it's, you know, you read in the papers that the union did this and the union did that. Were you really sure of that? I mean, it sounds like you were really sticking yourself out on a limb to run out there and ask them to help you to unionize that shop. Now, were you scared? Were you sure of what you were doing? How did you feel?
I felt that I was getting support. They would promise me support. They promised me support. So they said to me, you go out for a couple of days and talk to the people. And we had an Italian fella. He used to come in every couple of years to make a couple of $100. He had a wife in Italy. And he was too. I could have talked to him. And he helped me alone too. His name was Louis.
Were you excited? How did you feel?
I was very much excited about it. Yeah, that I'm going to do a good deed to help the people to organize, and I'll be one of them too in it. And he told me to go back to the shops and talk up to people about the union, and some of them knew about the union. In fact, they inspired me to go to them to talk to them. But they were themselves, they were afraid to go because they'll be fired. But they told me to go. And I
was. Were you afraid?
No, I wasn't afraid.
Why?
I wasn't afraid because I thought, well, if I wouldn't work here, I'll work somewhere else. I'll find work to do something. I was even willing to work as a maid, to do housework. I was willing to do anything just to make a living.
Why were they specifically afraid? Because they wanted to stay in the shop that they were in?
No, they wanted to be there, but somebody else should do the dirty work for them. That's what they wanted. And I was not afraid. I had plenty of ambition to do this here. And I went in the shop, and I kept on talking to the people and talking to them and telling them. And Harshefness already was organized a little bit. The main organization came in 18, But they were, part of them were organized, part of them were organized. And I talked to people and they all agreed with me and I came
down. Did you have trouble talking to them? Like, you know, was the form including that you were trying to do something in the shop? How did you communicate with everybody?
Not with everybody. I was tipped off not to talk to some of them. To that Italian fella, Louis, and to that girl, Anna, I talked. And there were a few more girls that
I
talked.
Who knew the people in the shop that could tell you who you shouldn't talk to?
They worked there long before me. They started working there before me. I was just a new girl. I worked there for, maybe a few months.
Who knew the people in the shop that could tell you that you shouldn't talk to certain people?
Yeah, well, the Anna and the Louis, and then there was another Polish woman. She said, be careful for this one, be careful for this one. But I talked to them, and I thought, well, let them do the talking to the
others. Oh, okay, like this Italian guy, they had worked there a long time, and they told you who you should talk to and who you shouldn't.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
When did you approach them about striking? Were you sitting at the table
No, we go for work. We used to go for work. I used to pick up from that girl work, and I used to give that girl work, and this girl work after used to pass by, and so on.
Wasn't it obvious if you were spending a lot of time talking to somebody?
No, I wouldn't talk it too much.
What would you say?
Not too much. I explained them. I said that we have a strike now. You know, we have a big strike? Yeah, we have a big strike. Well, what could we do about it? I said, well, you could do the same thing as they do. Help out on the strike and so on. Let's go down and strike. If they call us, let's go down. I prepared the boys to call us, to give us a whistle, a signal. And the boys gave us a signal. They gave it a whistle. And there we all got up and we went out.
How long did you take to contact people in your shop? How long did it take?
It didn't take very long. Maybe a week. Maybe a week or so.
Is that the way you did it the whole time? You'd go to different people?
Well, I would run through. Nobody even noticed it. I would run through and say, did you see all the people outside? Did you see all the strikers? And sometimes we would go to work and we would see in the building was some other factory in the building and they were striking. I said, do you see the people are striking the other way? They were picketing. People were picketing. Yeah. And we all went down, with the exception of a few fellas didn't go down. And just a few people. They didn't have work. They were just sitting and getting paid over there. But they all went down.
Can you remember specifically how you felt when you heard that whistle?
I was scared to death. Honest to God. When I heard it, I shivered like anything. I was scared to death. And we all went down, and they let us, the boys, the cutters and trimmers, they let us to the headquarters. Where was our headquarters at that time?
The Amalgamated?
Of the Amalgamated headquarters, yeah. At that time, it was very little. Our headquarters were very... that building, I don't know whether that building is still on. It was on Harrison and Halstead. On Harrison and Halstead. It was a great big building on Harrison and Halstead. And we came there and they gave us coffee there and they had speakers, that Sam Levine and that Rosenblum, they were the speakers, you heard of them, Sam Levine and Rosenblum, and Potoski and Risman.
Did you know who all these people were when you went to the...
A couple of boys I knew that I spoke, like Risman, he used to come, he was a cutter too. I knew Risman, and I knew Geyer was another fella. He became then an officer too. And Potoski was in there, Potoski. I met a lot of them later in there, in the union I met, that I became friendly with them. And we were on a strike, and we lost our strike that time.
Could you explain a little bit more exactly what exactly what happened within that time period?
Well,
you walked out.
When we walked out, we went on the picket line every day and three times a day. So they had people were sitting there without doing anything. They couldn't do operate without the shop. So, but they used to get paid, the other people.
Yeah, so, they just walk into the shop and sit there?
I imagine so. I wasn't in the shop, so I imagine so, because they couldn't do, they couldn't operate the coat because the coat makers were on the strike, and a few of them worked. A few of them were there. So we used to go into to picket three times a day. In the morning, they used to pick us up and throw us in the wagon.
And did they pick you up from home?
No, from the picket line. I used to go come to the picket line in the morning. 8 o'clock, I was on the picket line. I used to leave the house. My aunt used to give me 10 cents carfare, for carfare, 5 cents it was carfare at that time. And sometimes I ate, sometimes I didn't eat. Sometimes somebody treated us, from the business agents. They used to treat us, and sometimes they didn't. So this year the Irene used to go up and say, Mr. So-and-so, Lottie didn't eat yet. So he used to take us to eat, and she would get the meal too. And sometimes there was somebody else, so the union would pay for this year. I imagine so that they paid him for it. And there were people that worked for the union in that time in the strike. One was from New York, and they were from all over. And so. They used
to go at 8 in the morning.
8 in the morning. And I would come up, and they made up that they didn't want me, they didn't want to see me around the shop. That was orders. So they used to arrest me, and they'd throw me in the wagon. And we had lawyers from the union in the in police station that anybody was arrested, they used to book him right away. So they booked me for in the afternoon. I was back on the picket line. So
what was the reason? What were their reasons for picking you up? Because you were on the premises, you were at the shop.
Yeah, at the picking the shop, and they must have gotten the police must have gotten orders from the boss to get rid of me. So they used to take me and then the other girl. They used to take the other girl too, and that was three times a day like this year.
You'd get arrested three times a day,
yeah. And every time they would bail me out. But one time they didn't want to book me. They have to book you when you come in. They have to book you in order to bail you. So I was worried for my aunt. My aunt, I used to call into my aunt every time I had a chance. So because she worried about me always, I asked them to call my aunt. So they refused to call my aunt, and they refused to call anything, make me to call. So I sat there and I cried. Once they put me in a cell with a bunch of prostitutes. They put me in a cell in. And they used to laugh and they used to giggle and look at her, and tell me stories. And I would sit on a bench. We had two long benches. I used to sit on in the cage. I used to sit and cry. It was very unpleasant to sit with them, the way they dressed and the way they talked and the way that talked between themselves. Why they picked them up and so on.
What was their reaction to you?
Well, they thought that I was just nothing. I was just a nothing. But then later, the whole house participated in picketing, and they helped us picketing. Jane Addams and Alligator Starr, and there were a lot of society people affiliated with that time with the whole house. There was a Mrs. Lilly from, she was a millionaire's wife. I think that her husband was had a chemical in the chemical industry, a lab industry. I don't know. I think they are.